Welcome to the Mormon Channel. You're listening to Past Impressions, a program that examines the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as we discuss important people, places, events, and issues associated with the history of the Church. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and joining me today is Brother Larry Morris, Senior Editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project here in Salt Lake City in the Church History Department. Larry, welcome. We're glad to have you here for another
Thank
episode.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We've been talking about the witnesses of the Book of Mormon. In our last episode, we talked about the three witnesses, David Whitmer, Martin Harris, and Oliver Cowdery, and found that very, very fascinating. As you mentioned, Larry, that the prophet Joseph Smith became aware of the need for witnesses to the Book of Mormon, one, because of just the biblical tradition of having everything done by in the mouth of two or three witnesses, also by revelation, and also through the translation of the Book of Mormon process. In fact, two important scripture references that our readers ought to be aware of is in Ether chapter 5, as Joseph is translating the Book of Mormon, the Moroni puts right there in the plates that before when he seals these plates up, then it's going to come forth by the power of God, and that the person that translate those will have the power and the ability to show unto three in the mouth of these three witnesses the word will go forth. And we've talked about that. And in 2 Nephi chapter 27, Nephi says the same thing about in that day when it'll come forth. So long before Joseph Smith ever had identified Oliver Cowdery, Martin Harris, and David Whitmer, he knows that there are to be witnesses. And fascinating to me also is that it says in the Book of Mormon that there will be others that will be witnesses. Today we're going to talk about those others. So Larry, who are the others that we have as witnesses to the Book of Mormon besides just the three?
Well, you know, they came from two families, the Joseph Smith Sr. family and the Whitmer family. And from the Joseph Smith Sr. family, you have Joseph Smith Sr. himself, Hiram Smith, and Samuel Smith, Joseph Smith's brothers. And from the Whitmer family, you have Christian Whitmer, Jacob Whitmer, Peter Whitmer Jr., John Whitmer, and Hiram Page, who was a brother-in-law to the to the Whitmer brothers. So basically two families
well,
are represented.
Well, and David Whitmer, I guess you'd say, is also connected to the Whitmer family ultimately as well. So,
and to me, the really interesting thing is that the three witnesses and the eight witnesses serve different purposes.
Okay.
The three witnesses, although they saw the plates and they testify of that, their main purpose seems to testify of the religious truth of the Book of Mormon.
Okay.
The eight witnesses, on the other hand, seem to have the specific mission of testifying of the plates,
okay,
of the physical reality of the plates. And, you know, in their testimony, they say, Joseph Smith has shown unto us the plates of which hath been spoken, which have the appearance of gold, and as many of the leaves as the said Smith has translated we did handle with our hands, and we also saw the engravings thereon, all of which has the appearance of ancient work and of curious workmanship. And this we bear record with words of soberness that the said Smith has shown unto us, for we have seen and hefted and know of a surety that the said Smith has got the plates of which we have spoken.
Huh.
They're testifying of the plates.
Mm-hmm.
And really, their testimony is not a particularly religious statement.
Why do you think that is the case? Why is there so much emphasis on the plates?
I believe because since the three witnesses saw the plates in the presence of an angel, critics could argue that it was a vision. And sometimes when people use the word vision, they mean something that you see in your mind's eye, so to speak. But with the eight witnesses, you remove any of that discussion and just make it perfectly clear that Joseph Smith had the actual artifact of the plates.
Isn't that interesting? I've always found it ironic in the history of the church that the plates become such an issue that people mock and make fun of Joseph Smith of saying that he has these gold plates and yet the incredible efforts to try to get them from him.
That's right.
They make fun and say, how can he make this up, that there are plates, and that's just crazy to believe it. And yet in the same time, they're going after him, trying to steal the plates from him. You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and with me today is Larry Morris of the Joseph Smith Papers Project in the Church History Department. We've been talking about the eight witnesses of the Book of Mormon. Larry, we've talked about the witnesses and the connection to the prophet Joseph Smith, the Whitmer family, the Smith family. How many witnesses do you really need to establish the truth of something? Is this overkill? Why eight?
You know, I think eight is actually kind of excessive when you consider the normal patterns of history. If you take the Lewis and Clark expedition, for example, it is considered to be very well documented. And there were probably six or seven members of the expedition who were generally keeping a journal. But for any given event, usually you will have three or four people who recount that experience. And that is considered very well documented.
Mm-hmm.
Many historical events may only be documented by one person.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly goes far beyond the normal standard of history. And the testimony of the eight witnesses, I believe, is so powerful that critics have attempted to claim that they did not have a physical experience, that they were somehow fooled or tricked. And
which was rather remarkable of an argument as well, to think of this unschooled farm boy from upstate New York pulling off that kind of
a hoax
right. as well.
That's right. You bet. Dan Peterson down at BYU has got a really good comment about this. And he says, "It seems implausible to assume that the witnesses, early 19th century farmers who spent their lives rising at sunrise, pulling up stumps, clearing rocks, plowing fields, sowing seeds, carefully nurturing crops, herding livestock, milking cows, digging wells, building cabins, raising barns, harvesting food, bartering for what they could not produce themselves, wearing clothes made from plant fibers and skins, anxiously watching the seasons and walking or riding animals out under the weather until they retired to their beds shortly after sunset, in a world lit only by fire, were estranged from everyday reality."
Huh, interesting.
They knew if they saw and handled plates that had fine engravings on them.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's kind of I like the whole concept of Occam's razor, that the easiest, the simplest explanation is usually right.
Yes.
And to go to such extremes to discredit a very simple explanation, a very straightforward declaration, that it just goes beyond beyond belief. What do we do with this argument that the story that is told that the eight witnesses only felt plates underneath a cloth or something, that they didn't actually see plates, but that it was kind of this sleight of hand or just feeling something under the cloth? What do we do with that?
Well, none of the eight witnesses ever said anything like that. Mm-hmm. What happened was, when Martin Harris was talking to some apostates, they reported that Martin Harris said that the eight witnesses didn't see the plates. Mm-hmm. So what you have is a third-hand account, and mm-hmm. we all know what can happen when a story gets passed from one person to another. Basically, it becomes a rumor being passed around. And so it's not really responsible scholarship to take a third-hand story and try and use it as proof of anything.
Yeah.
When we have statements directly from the eight witnesses themselves, in fact, they reaffirmed their testimony many times throughout their lives, that the testimony printed in the Book of Mormon was true. Mm-hmm. And when modern critics read this supposed account of Martin Harris's supposed account, then they extrapolate and assume that the eight witnesses felt the plates through a blanket like some of Joseph Smith's family did, and that Joseph Smith somehow convinced them to imagine the engravings on the plate. But we have no primary document to back that up.
That's interesting. It would be inadmissible in a court of law as hearsay evidence. And
absolutely.
And yet most of the critics of the church that call into question are using hearsay evidence or way second, third, fourth hand, and yet dismiss the first hand witnesses
right.
of them.
Richard Anderson says it's like constitutional scholars spending pages and pages talking about the Constitution and never mentioning the document
yeah.
itself. They ignore the testimony that's printed in the Book of Mormon.
That's the power of the witnesses. You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm Brent Topp, and Larry Morris is our guest today as we are examining the testimonies and experiences of the eight witnesses and others that bear witness of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon. In our last segment, we talked of the power of having multiple witnesses, firsthand witnesses. Larry, why don't we talk about, as we did with the three witnesses, why don't we talk about what became of the eight witnesses, and what other experiences do we have in the historical record about these eight men whose names are in the front of the Book of Mormon, along with David Whitmer, Oliver Cowdery, and Martin Harris?
You know, sometimes people will say something to the effect that all or most of the eight witnesses left the church.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not true, because of the eight, three left the church.
Interesting.
And those three, none of them were rebaptized. But, of course, the Smiths, Joseph Sr., Hiram Smith, and Samuel Smith, all remained in the church and stayed true to their testimony.
And I guess we could even say of those three, they even gave their lives for their witness of their testimony as well.
Well, that's certainly right.
Joseph Sr. wore out his life in support of his son. Hiram at Carthage, and Samuel, I guess you would say, was a martyr in defense of the testimony and declaring the word of the martyrdom. So
yes.
They certainly gave their lives for the restoration.
You know, Joseph Smith Sr. at one point, he accepted imprisonment and 4 days of starvation rather than renounce the Book of Mormon.
Wow.
Samuel Smith confirmed his published testimony and at one point said, "I know the book to be a revelation from God translated by the gift and power of God." And Hiram, who was with Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail, said, "I had been abused and thrust into a dungeon on account of my faith. However, I thank God that I felt a determination to die rather than deny the things which my eyes had seen, which my hands had handled," speaking obviously of the plates, "and which I had borne testimony to wherever my lot had been cast."
Wow. Powerful testimony.
You bet. The Whitmer side, when David Whitmer was excommunicated in 1838, the rest of the Whitmer family also became disaffected from the church at that time. But they gave very powerful testimonies. And at one point, John Whitmer, who was a prominent church historian, he was in with a group of anti-Mormon friends who were, and there's some skepticism arose about the Book of Mormon. And he said, "I now say I handled those plates. There were fine engravings on both sides." Hmm. Hiram Page, who was a brother-in-law to the Whitmers, he married one of the Whitmer daughters. Well, his son said, "I knew my father to be true and faithful to his testimony of the divinity of the Book of Mormon until the very last." And Jacob Whitmer's son said, "My father was always faithful and true to his testimony of the Book of Mormon and confirmed it on his deathbed." Hmm. You have a number of people like Jacob Whitmer, Oliver Cowdery, Martin Harris as three examples who all bore their testimony as they were dying.
Hmm. Wow. That Now, I've been at the gravesite of the of a lot of the Whitmers there in Richmond, Missouri, and that's inspiring to know that though they some of them never came back into the kingdom, they're bearing testimony on their deathbed, and it goes beyond that. Their children are also bearing testimony of their father's integrity, and though they may have been angry at the church or leaders of the church for various and sundry reasons, they upheld the integrity and honor of their fathers, standing as witnesses of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon and the reality of the plates.
That's right.
Where do they end up? Is there anything more that we know about them or their or where they go, or we know with Joseph Sr. and Samuel and others, anything else that we can know about their background and their credibility as witnesses?
Well, you know, Christian Whitmer and Peter Whitmer Jr., who were both in the group of eight witnesses, they both died in Missouri as faithful members of the church. Okay. Christian in 1835 and Peter Whitmer Jr. in 1836. And Peter Whitmer Jr. was one of the first missionaries for the church.
Goes on the Lamanite mission.
That's right. He went with Oliver Cowdery and Ziba Peterson and Parley P. Pratt from New York into Ohio, where they converted Sidney Rigdon and many others. And then they went on to Missouri. And so he was bearing testimony through that entire journey of his experience as a witness. And Hiram Page, all of the Whitmers stayed in Missouri for the rest of their life, and Hiram Page died in Missouri in 1852. John Whitmer was the last to die other than his brother David, and he died in Far West in 1878. And continue to affirm his testimony.
And was the historian of the church for a period of time.
You bet.
So once again, another credible witness. You're listening to Past Impressions as we discuss the importance of events, people, places, issues associated with the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and we've been talking today with Larry Morris of the Church History Department, senior editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project. Larry, as we've talked about the three witnesses and the eight witnesses and those very formal and public declarations of their of what they saw, what they felt, what they heard, and their testimonies of the Book of Mormon, there are also other witnesses whose names are not in the front of the Book of Mormon. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about what we might call the other witnesses?
Oh, you bet. It's really pretty impressive when you think about it. Joseph Smith is a witness, and he is backed up by the three witnesses. Then you have another eight. So right there we have 12, and we even have others. When Joseph brought the plates back to his home in September of 1827, they were covered with a frock, and he brought those right into the house. And William Smith, his younger brother, felt the plates through the cloth and described the rings through the plates and how he could feel the leaves. And he even hefted them, said they weighed about 60 pounds. And Catherine Smith, Joseph's younger sister, also felt the plates through the cloth. So you have two witnesses of the physical reality of the plates right there. Then when the translation of the Book of Mormon was taking place, Emma Smith testified that the plates were on a table covered with a cloth and that she felt the plates through the cloth and had a similar experience as Catherine and William Smith had. So she knew of the physical reality. Then in June of 1829, when they were finishing up the translation at the Whitmer home, Mary Whitmer, that's David Whitmer's mother, had an experience where the angel Moroni appeared to her and showed her the plates. And we don't have her firsthand account, but we have the accounts of her children speaking of this experience. So she was essentially in the same category as the eight witnesses. Well, she was kind of a cross.
I was going to say, she gets the angel as well.
Yeah, she gets both. She gets the physical reality of the place, and she also gets the spiritual side of things by seeing an angel. She's quite an impressive witness.
And as I understand it, she's probably the only one that of the only woman that actually sees the plates.
That's correct.
Emma describes it and describes the cloth over it and that she was never tempted to take the cloth off of it. But Mary Musselman Whitmer actually becomes a witness of the angel and seeing the plates.
Exactly.
With no encumbrance. So,
you bet.
Why do you think that Mary Whitmer would be blessed with such an incredible manifestation?
Well, you know, the Whitmers had quite a number of people staying at their house in June of 1829. And they didn't have – most of these folks didn't have large houses with all kinds of guest rooms. It was quite a burden on her to have so many people there. And they had been – that family had been so supportive of Joseph Smith that I think she was probably being rewarded for her faithfulness.
I think that's a wonderful, wonderful explanation and would show the mercy and tenderness of the Lord and a compensation, a really divine compensation. Well, what is the takeaway that you get from our discussion of witnesses and your study of witnesses? What did witnesses mean to the prophet Joseph Smith?
Joseph, of course, you know, from 1823, when he first had the first visit of Moroni, all the way through to 1829, he had been testifying of the plates himself. Mm-hmm. No one else had seen the plates. And so it was quite a burden on him. And even before the Book of Mormon was even published, newspapers in the area were ridiculing Joseph Smith and making fun of him because of this story. And of course, he was a young man. We've got to remember he was quite young and he was uneducated. And really, the wrath of the world was coming down on him because of his testimony. And so it was quite a lifting of that burden when the three witnesses and then the eight witnesses were able to join him and back up his testimony.
Yeah, in fact, Lucy Mack Smith tells that wonderful story of after the great experience with the witnesses, he came in and just threw himself down and describes how the weight of the world has been lifted from his shoulders.
Yes.
That is such a powerful, powerful witness. Well, what do we what power do the witnesses of the Book of Mormon have for us today?
I like to just frequently open up the Book of Mormon and read the testimony of both the three and the eight. And it is so powerful to see their witnesses and to know something of their lives and how they endured persecution and remained true to their testimonies. And then, of course, that's followed by the Book of Mormon itself, which the great witness of the Book of Mormon, I believe, is the appearance of Christ to the Nephites after his resurrection as another physical event with witnesses present.
You know, as a mission president, I had our missionaries often talk to people about the testimony of the witnesses because there's just no getting around it. There's just no getting around it. But as President Gordon B. Hinckley said, that the greatest witness of the Book of Mormon is the Book of Mormon itself. And as you pointed out, that Book of Mormon that we hold in our hands, we read and receive a witness by the power of the Holy Ghost, just confirms the great witnesses of the three, the eight, the others. And each of us have the potential to also be a witness of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon. Larry, thank you so much for sharing with us your knowledge and your testimony of the witnesses of the Book of Mormon and the book itself.
Thank you.
I'm Brent Topp, and you've been listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, and we look forward to you joining us for a future episode. Thank you.